unqualified success.
Now get the guns, the drugs from my generation.
Years ago, I took on every wrestling promoter throughout North America. I kicked every one of their asses.
The fraud, the messer with me.
In a court of law, I took on the United States of America, and I kicked her ass. I took on WCW, and it took me a while, but I kicked their asses. Not because I was an asshole, no, no. Ask me, Mr. McMahon, what's your secret? More than any one quality that makes me the successful man that I am, ruthless aggression. So I want to know here tonight, as you stand here on my ring, which one of you has that quality? Who among you has that one single ingredient? Who has enough ruthless aggression?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
North South Podcast, Speed. Welcome again. This is a big episode of the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast for many reasons. One being, this is my 10th episode, so I've made it up to episode 10. Another, we are at a pay-per-view, which when you're going week by week, a pay-per-view always seems kind of like a milestone. Makes you feel like you're actually making some progress through this journey. And also, I have a first-time guest who is a fellow North-South contributor. I would say probably one of the head honchos here on North South Feed. He is the host of The Year That Was. He is on Noel's Bar, TNA Never Dies, a litany of podcasts here on North South Feed, and that is Mr. Aaron George. What's up, Aaron?
You know, if you've done 10, you're probably not quitting.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a good sign.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm in it for the long haul at this point.
When does this era end? 2008?
Yeah, I'm not sure. In my mind, I think 2006, but it may stretch to 2008.
What will be the end? Is it when they go PG?
Yeah, because then if you're getting the PG, then you're getting almost into, I don't know, like, I guess maybe, yeah, like 2008 to 2010-ish, that sort of time frame. So,
yeah. Whew. It's like when they really start waving the middle finger at the fans, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So speaking of, Aaron, what is your, since it's your first time on here, what is your background with this era? Like, were you a fan? Were you still locked in 2002?
I was, but I think a bit reluctantly. Like, things are, because look, I was still, I mean, I started watching wrestling in 1987. I'm that old, right? And I know there's older, but, and I was pretty locked in. I mean, I kind of lost a bit of interest in the mid-90s and then got back into it around 96 because of Sid, obviously. And then I was watching consistently since about then. And around this era, I was definitely still watching Raw every week. I was watching it. I'd go to the bars and watch pay-per-views with the friends. So I was completely locked in at this point.
Yeah. And I've said it before in here too. I was kind of in the same boat. I think it is the... Within a few years of this, I would start to wane a little bit and kind of get into my, like everybody ends up taking a sabbatical. I think I end up taking my sabbatical within a few years after this. Like, I always think of WrestleMania 20 as like a point where I started fading a little bit.
You didn't care for Chris Benoit?
See, I've never been a big Benoit. Like, I liked him.
But me neither.
I've never been a hardcore Benoit guy. Like, I thought he was good and all, but... You know, some people, he's like their favorite wrestler ever and everything. So I guess it worked out for us in the end.
Yeah, right. We won, guys. Yeah. He's infamous now. Fuck you.
Exactly. I think we could work in a nice plug here in that we don't have to reveal where you ranked it yet, because correct me if I'm wrong, but on The Year That Was, I definitely don't think you've gotten to 2002.
Oh, no.
So so you don't have to reveal where it would be, but would you give a brief sort of, I guess, a preview of your general thoughts on the year, since we are kind of smack dab in 2002?
Sure. Like, look, I haven't written my notes for it yet, because it's
right
now I'm about to record the 10th. I'm also about to record the 10th episode, so I guess I'm going to finish to see it through too. But so the 10th worst, which is coming up soon. And so this one is like substantially higher. Like, I would say it's going to finish in the top, almost the top third. Wow. And I really like the year. This was a year when I rewatched it, I really enjoyed rewatching. This was a year where I was really working a lot. So I ended up missing, I think I missed a lot of the fall. So like I never ended up, I mean, I ended up seeing them through time, but I don't think I ever saw the full shows until I would say September, October. I definitely saw November, but September, October for sure, I didn't see until I rewatched it for the project. But I thought the it's a really interesting year. The match quality is like really high, like pretty much consistently through. And it kind of gets dinged a little bit for like, it's not the best Rumble, it's not the best WrestleMania, but it's a good year. And I really liked watching it.
Yeah, one thing I've noticed just so far, kind of deep diving, is the amount of star power. They're just, the roster's so loaded. Like Eddie just came back too. I mean, just up and down the card. And like, we'll see it on this show, especially. I mean, they've done the brand split, but they haven't really split off the pay-per-views where they split the talent into different pay-per-views. So still in every pay-per-view, you're getting, you know, ideally, the best of SmackDown, the best of Raw. So it's pretty loaded as far as star power goes. So, yeah.
Well, it's a really good point because when you look at it, when a guy like Eddie Guerrero is on your undercard, it usually means your promotion's super healthy.
Yes.
Like when he gets moved up, it's still good and it's still great, but there's something that hole that they fill by moving those guys up, it takes a long time for them to replace. This isn't a 2002 thing. This is a kind of 2000s thing, right? Yeah. But that's a big thing I noticed is that like when they get the Radicals, that infusion in 2000, their mid-card is set. And so you're always guaranteed like really great matches on every show. They bump them all up, there's a big void. And like I like Booker T, but he's not filling it on his own, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because this is sort of the period where they still have some of the old stalwarts of the Attitude Era, like Austin, still hanging around, which we'll get into where he's in a weird spot, but still you still have his star power, you know. You can't deny his star power, and he's still on the show, so it is, you kind of have a mix of all those. So I'm kind of with you on that. So what we normally do is we'll go through the news and notes. So let's start with that, because we are kind of towards end of May. We're in May 2002. So first one, probably the biggest note that we have. So the night before this pay-per-view was the death of Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, passed away while on vacation in Fairmont, British Columbia. So in your home, well, not your home, but your home country, Aaron.
Literally the other side of the country.
Yes. Yeah. But he was only, I didn't remember him being quite this young. He was 39 years old.
That's insane. Are you older than 39? I don't know how old you are.
No, I'm about to turn 30.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh! So I'm 40. So like, man, I'd be dead. If I was David Boy, I'd be dead.
Yeah.
And but I'd also be married to that fucking harpy. So
yeah,
maybe I'd want to be.
And, apparently he was divorced at this time. So,
well, good for him.
And yeah, but, it was a drug overdose. Obviously he, had been known to put a lot of things in his body that were probably not good, steroids and the like. So eventually it kind of caught up to him. He dies of a heart attack from a drug overdose. This is not really relevant, but I've never heard of this guy at all, but is another death. But I figured I'd mention it, Aaron, because he is from Winnipeg. George Gordienko, who's a wrestler from the 1940s to the 1970s. And he died at age 74, and he was famous for his communist beliefs. So not sure if you heard of him, Aaron.
One less communist. That's all I need to say.
Apparently he caught a lot of heat in Canada for passing out communist pamphlets. So.
In Canada? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So another death. We just have so many deaths in May of 2002. And I think Dave even mentions, like, you know, this is probably not a good sign that all these people are dying. So Big Dick Dudley passed away of ECW fame at the age of 34 from kidney failure.
Kidney failure at 34?
Brutal.
Was it just sustaining that giant dick?
He needed a third kidney to be able to filter all the blood. To filter all the blood pumping in that bad boy. But yeah, 34. And sadly, we have one more. And it is someone even younger. The infamous mass transit, real name Eric Koulis, died. Not sure of the cause of death, but at age 22. So, you know,
For sure, New Jack went to his house and murdered him.
It's like undisguised.
His parents are in the other room like, who's playing Natural Born Killers like at that volume?
Yes, he just plays it the whole time while he's murdering him. He's like, I'm here to finish the job.
Boo! I imagine that song follows New Jack everywhere he goes.
It's amazing. He's like in a diner getting breakfast, just playing.
But no one dares to tell him to turn it off.
Amazing. Continuing. So luckily we are done with the deaths, thank goodness. But yeah, definitely not a good sign. All these wrestling personalities dying at such horrifyingly young ages. But we are right on the cusp. I've been covering it as we go just to kind of show how it parallels what's going on in WWE. But NWA TNA is right on the cusp of starting up, and Dave covers who they have coming in as announcers. So they have been in talks with Scott Hudson, Mike Tenay, to be commentators. And then in a very funny note, I think this will pop you, Aaron, Dave calls him Dan West. which is, of course, Don West, who is a former Home Shopping Network host who has somewhat of a cult following as a good hard sell guy. So I need to do more research on Don West, because I still am not quite sure how he swung this gig.
If you want to get a good view of him, watch episode 7 or 8. He does it on both. They do something I've never seen any wrestling company do this before, where Tenay will just go, all right, Don, sell us on next week's show. And then he stands up and just fucking loses his mind.
It's like he's hawking VCRs on QVC. Yes.
He's going to have a heart attack. Anybody who wants to listen to us break it down, check out TNA Never Dies. 7 and 8 are dropping soon.
Exactly. Perfect plug. So a seamless integrated plug. I love it. Also, Vince Russo, Meltzer reports, is definitely going to be involved, even though Jeff Jarrett is still denying it at this point. Dave is very confident that Vince Russo will be involved, which of course he will be. And finally, last note he has on TNA is that they are trying to sell tickets for their first show in Huntsville, Alabama, and things are moving extremely slowly. As of his press time, about 3 weeks before the show, they have sold less than 300 tickets, which is not a great sign, he says. So
no, well, they probably should have not advertised Brian Lawler. If they get him off the card, maybe. Place will start filling up.
So not necessarily hot out the gate for TNA.
Someone who's watched TNA, I just want to say, I wish Mass Transit or Big Dick Dudley was still alive. I would trade Brian Lawler to the afterlife with them.
You wish that would have been the note, is like in a sudden Brian Lawler has passed away right before the debut of NWA TNA. So Aaron doesn't have to deal with this shit.
That'd be such a weird time fuck up. Like, oh my god, but I watched it. It's like the fucking Berenstain Bears.
Yeah. Could have got New Jack on him, maybe.
Oh, that'd be the best.
Okay, so our final note is back to WWE. Former ECW wrestler Nova, aka Simon Dean, in his OVW debut, captured the OVW title from Prototype, some guy Prototype, and was done as a change of plans because Leviathan, aka Deacon Batista, was recently called up, as we've covered on the podcast, which kind of threw Cornette into a tizzy as he had to try and figure things out, because I guess Batista was like his biggest star at the time. So already some Prototype notes going on down up in OVW.
Imagine having Prototype and Leviathan as your champion, and then Nova.
BWO for life.
It's like if James Ellsworth beat AJ Styles for the belt.
Yeah, Prototype, who would become arguably, you know, top five figure in their history, and he's losing to Nova. Yeah. But anyway, that will wrap our notes up, Aaron, so we can get ready to dive into the actual show.
Let's
Judgment Day 2002. We are live from the Gaylord Entertainment Center in Nashville, Tennessee. Yes, I'm sure, especially in 2002. Can only imagine. The attendance.
Spoiler, Don West would be very upset because he's very upset at certain people.
Certain people. Attendance, pretty good, like 14,500-ish, so pretty packed. It looks like it when you're watching it. Like, it looked like they're pretty, you know, they're still, like I've spoke on previous episodes, how their business is starting to show some signs of kind of wavering, but not to the point of, like, they're not at, like, 1995 levels or something like that. There's some few chinks in the armor, but they're still selling out pay-per-views and stuff. And I think the buy rate's pretty good for this one, too, like 400,000 buys or something. So it's not like they're struggling, per se. So we get this intro. So the intro, what were your thoughts on this little intro video? So I thought it was pretty violent.
Yes. Yeah. First thing I wrote was, like, here we go with the Undertaker shit in the intro, like with the kids chanting. And, like, yeah, it was extremely violent.
Yeah, like, and I think we actually had an image of someone, like, actually hanging.
Yeah, was that Saddam Hussein?
Maybe. If so, they're kind of predicting. It's a nice prediction of the future.
He's like the last real high-profile hanging we got, right?
Yes. But the hanging, the noose motif will continue throughout the show.
And like, uncomfortable. And Freddie Blassie asking, like, have you had a good life? Like, what? And they show pictures of Hulk Hogan. Like, is he dying? Like, is he passing away from the show? Like,
he might. I did like the set, too, because we're still in the point where we have, like, actual unique sets. So they have this set with the gravestones and stuff that kind of have the video screens and stuff. So I thought that was a pretty cool touch.
And when they cared.
It's always, yes, back when, yeah, we actually had a theme for each pay-per-view and it actually meant something. Correct. So our first match out of the gate is a big Intercontinental title match, Eddie Guerrero versus RVD, which has been a lingering feud. Definitely a good choice for an opener, I would say, on paper. And I've really enjoyed this feud. It hasn't been anything groundbreaking. It's been pretty simple with, like, Eddie, like, basically not. He comes back. He doesn't let RVD basically wrestle any kind of match until he agrees to give Eddie a title shot. Eddie wins the title, and this is sort of the rematch. So I've kind of enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed Eddie since his return right here. He has that kind of heel swagger, and it's been pretty fun to watch him come back. Any thoughts on Eddie at this point, Aaron?
Very vascular. Very vascular, yes. Man. I loved him. I don't want to get too much in the past, but I remember loving when he came back the month before and just dismantled RVD. I thought that was so cool and different. And he just does so many little things that are really smart in this match. Like, I'll let you go on with the match a bit and as we get to it, but, like, I think there's a lot of really special things here, and this match tells a really interesting story too, I think.
Yeah, so it starts off super fast. RVD kind of gets the advantage at the beginning, and Eddie is kind of doing the heel sort of bailout to try and, cool off RVD's onslaught. But I kind of like the beginning, too, where it's sort of like RVD hits a one spot where he does almost like a pump fake and then hits Eddie, so he's kind of used to it, which is, I always like when they throw these things in when guys have been feuding for a little while and it's like the second or third match or whatever it might be, and they kind of know each other's tendencies and they throw in cool spots like that. He does a spot where he puts Eddie in a surfboard and then kind of launches him out. I really liked RVD's, like, aggressiveness through this whole match. Like, he really looked like he sometimes RVD can go through a spot sometimes and it sort of looks like it looks cool, but it doesn't quite have any. It can maybe not seem totally, like, I don't want to say legit, but super aggressive, or like he's, it's pretty, but not always, like, violent enough, I guess is one way of saying it. But I thought in this match, he totally looked like he was out to kick Eddie's ass, which was cool.
Yeah.
And then,
I was just going with you. Like, I love that it told the story of, like, this time he was prepared.
Yes.
That's what I got from it. And, like, that surfboard spot you mentioned, it's such a small thing, but, like, I love that they fight to get in it. Like, he tries to put him in at first and it doesn't work, so he starts dropping elbows on his back. Then he finally puts him in, stretches him out, and he keeps him there, like, a long time. Like, today, someone just walks into that spot. Like, this felt like an earned submission hold, which I really loved.
Yeah, and Eddie's selling is always on point. And so kind of they work through that. So I also like, so Eddie starts to slow it down, which made perfect sense because RVD comes out of House of Fire. He tries bailing out. RVD still come at him. So he's trying to slow down and get a little more methodical. I really liked Eddie's bumping in this match. I thought it was really awesome. Like, he was bumping his ass off. I mean, he pretty much always does. And so we get sort of to the finishing sequence, or not the finishing sequence, so towards the end, they both go for the frog splash and miss it, which again, I thought was a nice touch because a lot of this feud has been based around, you know, the battle of the frog splash and it being, you know, not their first meeting. They kind of both know the other one's going for it. And I like the idea that they both missed it. That was a cool, because it kind of lets you know that they're probably not going to go with that as the finish, which is interesting. There was a good near fall off the crossbody I thought was good. Mm-hmm. And then finally we get our finish is RVD goes for the backslide. It doesn't work. Eddie's able to get out of it. And Eddie goes right back to it at RVD with his own backslide with the added touch of putting his foot on the ropes just to show that one little thing that he was able to do. His one little heel tendency was able to get him the victory. And it kind of came out of nowhere. So I really enjoyed this match. I liked how much fire RVD had coming out. Like, he knew, like, he was trying to get his title back. But then you have the story of Eddie being just a little more crafty, a little more, I don't want to say ruthless, but just, yeah, right. Crafty, I think is the way to say it. I did feel like the finish did seem a bit abrupt, like they were kind of, they maybe had a next level in them, but all in all, I still think it told a really good story. I went 3.5 on this one, Aaron.
Yeah, I mean, I have similar thoughts. Like, I'm a pretty big RVD mark. I think he's really good, but I think he does tend to get a bit too showy in a lot of matches. And I didn't feel that at all in this match, which I really like because he was telling a different story. He was prepared. He was trying to win his title back. I love that RVD's moves hurt him. I don't think I've ever seen another wrestler do that. Like, he'll do the Rolling Thunder or he'll hurt his own back. Even the way he reacts to a frog splash, I think is really smart. I think it's kind of a shame that they're telling the story and the announcers are not helping them at all, I find, telling the story. Like, King is just yelling no mas. A bunch, like, throughout. I love, too, that RVD does this spot where, like, he throws Eddie into the corner, and then he does, like, the running shoulder backs, but to his back instead of his ribs, which I don't know if I've ever seen anybody do that before. Mm-hmm. So, again, it felt like it added urgency. They try that double countout spot, which worked well. But then what's cool is after the double countout spot, because typically in a double countout spot, like, the match just kind of dies. It doesn't die after, but, like, the guys are selling the exhaustion, but these two both kind of like power up and they speed the match up again, which I really love. And the finish I liked a lot. I Eddie Guerrero, that backslide looks like it's impossible to get out of, like the way he locks his arms down and pins them. I love the point you made about how he's just a little bit more dastardly. I like the story of him escaping with the title. I love this match. And going in, I was under the assumption that RVD won this. I thought he won it, not at the ladder match, but here. So I was actually surprised by the thing too. I went 4 on this, which I'm sure.
It'd probably be higher than most, but I sort of get it. I was a little torn because to me, part of it was like, I really liked the finish because it made perfect sense. But then part of me felt like it got cut a little bit short. So I was a little torn on as to how to go, but I mean, I'm 3.5, so I'm not far from you. I mean, I really like the storytelling. I guess I just thought maybe had that next level in it, but they cut it off, which is fine. Cause I mean, it kind of seems like there's probably one more in them. So
yeah. Cool with it. And to give you some context too, like I watched 2002, like maybe like 2.5 years ago. And like, I didn't, maybe 2, but I didn't look at my scores at all. I kind of just kind of wanted to see like what I'd look at this with fresh eyes. And I actually went higher on this match this time than I did last time.
Yeah. It's been a really good feud for sure. All right. So after that, great opener, we head backstage and we have Reverend Devon, who's with Vince and his, secretary Stacy. Eric, what are your thoughts on the Reverend gimmick? Because he's been around for, he's kind of taken off since the draft. I don't love him, but I don't hate him. He kind of is just a, it's just kind of one of those, I don't know, kind of mediocre to me. I don't know. What are your thoughts on the Reverend Devon, like as a character?
Okay, well, I don't want to talk about him as the performer because I think he probably does fine with what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Considering, I think it's just so lazy. It's like, oh, he says testify in a match? Well, let's make him a priest. Like, it comes out of nowhere. It's like someone latching on to the tiniest part of, like, it's like if they saw the Road Warriors and were like, oh, we'll put a road on the floor for them. Like, that's what it feels like to me. And I don't think, I mean, does he even wrestle on pay-per-view ever as Reverend Devon? Do they do anything with it?
Now he's sort of been aligned with Vince as kind of like a Vince, not really a lackey, but sort of a, like Vince has this weird thing going on right now where it's like, he doesn't really have a stable, but he kind of has guys that sort of kiss his ass and work with him. Like Devon does it. Jericho does it a little bit. And so they're all kind of involved with Vince, but not involved enough to be like a stable. I think Vince just loves making fun of religion, because that's what this whole little segment here is, because they like share the prayer. And so Devon says they're going to share a prayer. And while he's doing it, of course, looks down Stacy's cleavage, looks at her boobs. And I just think, like, man, he really loves any opportunity to just poke fun at religion. It's just a Vince thing. I could feel like that could be the whole point of this gimmick, too. It's just because he likes to make light of religion. It's just like a Vince thing. I don't know.
Well, he would later challenge God to fight the product of his semen. So I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. And Devon says that Bubba is not going to show up. And we get the first appearance of the nooses in the background of like the interview area, which is just so very unsettling.
And a lot of wrestlers end up killing themselves too. Like it's not a good image at all for this company.
It was one thing when you kind of have it in the video package where it's sort of, you know, got all the video effects stuff, but you see like an actual physical noose just hanging behind someone, just are they getting interviewed and stuff, was just, it was odd to me.
Yeah, so. And the boxes for people to stand on was just too much. That was a step too far for me. I do really like that Devon called Trisha Jezebel. That's my favorite WWF, like, talking to women, like talking about woman thing that they say.
It's so strange. It's such a strange term to call women. Like,
she used to yell at all. She's a Jezebel king. Like he'd always say that.
Oh yeah, I think he has said that since I started this podcast. I don't think he's totally retired Jezebel yet. Even though I think Stephanie is probably his favorite target of Jezebel.
Oh yeah, yeah, like, that's a fucking Jezebel.
Yes. So we go to this match now. So we have Trish versus Stacy.
Hold on. Listen, I watched it. I think it's a paper. It was taken from WWE 24/7. That's how I watched it. I didn't watch it on the network. Do you get all the World Wrestling Entertainment ads?
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
Because there's one of these here, and it's the one where like the guy's like landscaping.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Have you talked at all about how World Wrestling Entertainment makes no sense?
I haven't discussed it yet, but we can get into it now.
Because it doesn't make any sense in any sort of phrase.
Yes.
Like, because like you would say in the World Wrestling Federation, like I'm the greatest wrestler in the World Wrestling Federation. You can't say I'm the greatest wrestler in the World Wrestling Entertainment.
Yeah, because like a federation is like a group or like a grouping of things, you know.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, entertainment is not.
I need a noun here. Like somewhere. And the other thing is, you can't say I'm the WWE champ. I'm the World Wrestling Entertainment champion. Like it nothing works. They should have changed it to anything else. Anything. Or just not been an asshole and use your logo in Europe or whatever they did.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of too. A lot of guys in WCW would say the WCW, and that kind of always bothers me because it's sort of the same thing. The World Championship Wrestling.
Yeah. The World Wrestling Entertainment.
Yeah, it's not a group. So, I agree with you.
Uh-huh. It would also drive me crazy at the end of every pay-per-view, they'd flash the word entertainment across the screen. You know what you just got? You got entertainment.
Yeah. And yeah, so they've been pushing these heavily on the Raws and SmackDown since they had to change the name. Like they have this one, and I want to say on some other point in the show that the two they show is this one with the, you know, the hedges or whatever, and the other one where they place the sexual chocolate music and the guy's banging the girl in the limo. That's their.
What the hell
other
is that?
Yeah, well, I guess in the idea is to get the F out. I guess get out of the limo. So they can have sex, I guess.
Get the fuck out of the limo? Yeah.
Yes. Get out the limo so we can bone.
Wow. So, ridiculous.
So we have our women's title match, Trish versus Stacy, which they kind of threw together because unfortunately Daz got tore her knee or something, tore a ligament or knee, blew out her knee. So they kind of had to change things on the fly. Unfortunately, they decided to really make the crux of this pretty much about the Dudleys, like reuniting, but they're on opposite sides, like one's heel and one's face. And that pretty much overshadows the whole match because the match itself is really not much of anything. Stacy is really not a wrestler. They kind of just do a bunch of flash pins, and then Bubba shows up. Stacy slaps him when he laughs at her.
Good laugh he does. He does that stupid laugh in her face.
Yes, I have not been a big fan of Bubba on these shows, Aaron. He is probably one of my most hated people on all of these during this time frame because we're supposed to like him. He does a stupid dancing. He beats up women. It's just I don't know why I'm supposed to like him. He's annoying. So at one point, then the Deacon Batista comes in. He slams Trish and she kicks out, which I thought was a good spot for Trish to show that she kicks out of getting slammed by Batista. I think some people maybe had a problem with this because they said it makes Batista look weak or something. But at this point, he's just sort of a flunky anyway. So how did you feel about it? Were you okay with Trish kicking out?
Yeah, it's not like he powerbombed her. He body slammed her hard, but he didn't like it wasn't anything crazy. That's fine with it.
Yeah, and they've been trying to get Trish over as kind of resilient and, you know, that she could take a shit kicking and still get up. So I was fine with it because, I mean, she should be somebody you want to get over in this match. So the finish is Stacy accidentally hits the Deacon Batista and Trish comes by and hits her with a Stratisfaction. So Stacy loses. Not really much of a match. Like I said, Stacy not much of a wrestler. Not a ton of heat as this didn't really have much build to me. That would be like your main thing that could save this is there was a ton of heat, but it's really not like they had actually been feuding. This was thrown together like 2 weeks before the show as sort of a replacement angle. And I just felt like Trish was above this whole thing by now. Like I think she's elevated herself away from fighting Stacy and something that's barely even could be considered a match. So I went half a star on this one. Not too great.
I don't think the bulldog she used in the finish was a fitting tribute at all for Davey Boy Smith. It was god awful. Just god awful. Stacy, there's one point where Trish puts Stacy in a Boston Crab and Stacy doesn't even bend her legs. I'm like, how does she not know how to bend her legs? Like, it's absurd. And what, okay, maybe you can clear this up because you're watching the TV too, okay? Well, what? Why are Bubba and Devon mad at each other? Because the last time I saw them at the draft, the last time we were together, they seemed very sad that they were being separated. But now, right away, they're angry with one another.
Well, I can't tell you there, Aaron, because in my notes, I literally have the question, why is Bubba mad? Because I put that he's arguably the – I guess they're trying to get across he's unhappy that Devon has become this nefarious, you know, I don't know, priest, charlatan, whatever. But to me, Bubba's arguably worse. He, like, has been beating up women. So I'm not really sure why he has any right to be mad at Devon for, you know, having a collection plate.
For taking a bit of money. Like, he gets slapped in the face and his eyes bug out. Like, he does that thing there. Like, and if this were today, Michael Cole would be yelling, like, he's going to that place. Just big. This was nothing. It was a nothing match. After every two counts, Stacy complains. I went 1.5 for the match, but that's really bad for me. From what I'm understanding, too, with all of this, is like they're setting up a feud that no one wants to see, but also can't happen in theory because they're on different brands, right?
Correct. They are on separate brands, and unless you're a champion, you cannot go to a different brand.
Right, and neither one of them is going to be a champion anytime soon.
No. And so, yeah, to me, it was just them thinking, well, our women's feud got derailed, so we need to add some heat to this. So let's, you know, push the Dudleys against each other, even though they really haven't been separated for too long and they have no real reason to be mad at each other. So,
no.
Yeah, it just came off as kind of like nothing. It just came off as sort of forced.
And Bubba, like, gets to toss Batista out of the ring. Like, when would that ever happen again? Like, Bubba getting the best of Batista.
I know. Like, they really, they love trying to make Bubba look good. I don't know what it is. They're dead set on pushing him as somebody we're supposed to like, some dominant, cool guy, and I just don't see it. He annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah, he felt like that kid who's trying too hard to be cool with the hat on backwards and doing all Dusty Rhodes shit. And it's crazy because they're not even the only promotion that'll push him as a top single star.
Yeah, I don't get it at all.
I will say, when they put Bubba through the table, like they end up putting Bubba through the table at the end, the minute he hits, the organ music hits. It's like, like right away, it actually popped me quite a bit because I thought it was so perfect.
Yes, and they're always trying to get sympathy for him too, and it never works, you know? Like whenever, on a few episodes, the kind of setting this all up, he powerbombs Trish to the table on accident, and then he's carrying her out, and we're supposed to feel bad that he powerbombed Trish to the table. Like, I don't feel bad for him.
That's storytelling, pal, huh? There you go. Yeah.
So we head backstage. We have Flair speaking with Arn when he's approached by Vince. And they pretty much, this whole quick segment is to show that Flair kind of sees eye to eye with Vince. He understands where Vince was coming from by hating Stone Cold, because they really want to beat us over the head with the idea that Flair is pretty much Vince in his feud with Stone Cold. So,
I love how Vince comes into the room and then acts like he's surprised to see them there. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
And they hug.
Yeah.
I was going to say they hug, and Vince tries to do like that weird Austin face that Austin did when he got hugged, but it doesn't play anywhere near the same. It's just strange all around instead.
Yeah. So now we see that Flair is sympathetic towards Vince. All right. We head back to the ring, and we get a tag match, which is kind of a tag match, but sort of a handicap match in practice. We have the Hardys versus Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman. I've really enjoyed this feud so far. It's been really well done. It's been really brutal. They've done a lot of brutal things to get over Brock as this monster. And the Hardys have really hung in. They've kind of used their teamwork, and they haven't just been completely squashed by Brock, which, again, I think is some people, I think, don't like that part of it. Like in the match leading into this, it was a handicap match, and Heyman has to pull the ref for them to get the win. I mean, to kind of stop Brock from possibly losing. And I know some people don't like that spot, but I thought it was fine. I mean, the Hardys are not slouches, you know. They're a pretty legit team. So
multiple time tag team champions at this point.
Yeah, so I have no problem with it. And it's been a really good feud back and forth. So JR continues on his his thing is to, like, go after Paul Heyman and come up all these absurd names. And
hates him. He hates him.
He hates him. So in the entrance, he calls Heyman a human urinal.
Yeah. He calls him a rotund scalded dog.
Rotund scalded. He also calls him a living, breathing septic tank.
Yep.
So, yeah, JR he loves it. I think he's, like, he's popping himself in his head, coming up with these names for Heyman.
Yeah.
So the match, we start with Brock. He's just throttling Matt to begin. The Hardys sort of use the tags and teamwork to gain a little bit of advantage. Heyman ends up tagging in, or they get Heyman in there some way. They hit the poetry in motion. But then finally he tags in Brock, and he gets the F5 to cover Jeff. It was very short, but it made sense. It was not that different. They basically did this match without Heyman the week before this. And I actually thought the Raw match was a little bit better. I thought it was worked a little bit better with the, I guess, because probably didn't have to worry about incorporating Heyman. But it was short. It was short. It made sense. It didn't quite have the intensity that I think some of their best interactions have had. between them. So I went 2 stars on it. And I guess my question is like, was Heyman needed here? Like, would they have been better off just doing? I know you want to have the heat of him being like a little shithead and then making fun of the Hardys when they lose and him getting the cover because he gets to cover Jeff for the win. I guess my question is, was Heyman needed here? But either way, I thought it made sense for the feud.
I will say he wasn't, because I think when he finally did get beat up, like I found there was very little heat for it. Mm-hmm. Like when you picture Hulk Hogan beating up Jimmy Hart, the place is going ballistic, right? And I just thought it wasn't that for what that moment was. I mean, that's the reason to bring him in, and for it to not pop the audience, I don't know, didn't quite click for me. I think my favorite thing that JR said in this match as they came out, I didn't realize Heyman was in the match. See, I went in blind, right? I didn't look at the matches. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since I watched it. And the first thing JR says is, Matt and Jeff are going to do what many have dreamed of for years. And all I could think about is, what is he talking about? Are they going to tag team Lita? Like, what's happening? Like, I didn't understand. Then I realized they were going to fight Heyman. Heyman too, could he look like more of a loser here? Like the tracksuit.
Terrible. Yeah. He looks terrible.
It's so strange. Brock is like selling for Matt Hardy, which is strange too. But I do like the idea that they have to kind of work together to hurt him. I think that's really smart. Something I'd forgotten about were the Goldberg chants for Lesnar, mm-hmm. which I think are so stupid because he's so different than Lesnar right away.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's nothing even remotely similar aside from the fact that they kill people.
Yeah, I would argue, I don't get it either. I mean, in a very general sense, you know, in that they're both like dominant, you know, jacked up guys. But Goldberg to me was never had the violence of Brock. Like, you know, like lead as part of this feud, like he F5s Matt on the stage and like busts them all up. Like I never got that from Goldberg. Like they made Goldberg dominant, but he wasn't like a violent monster like this, you know. He was just a guy who was really strong and really good. Yeah. So I know what you mean with that. It's just I think it's a lazy, you know, fan thing to
like maybe Ryback later. When they were doing it to Ryback, that made more sense. Because he seems if he'd be more in the Goldberg mode.
Yeah, because I think it's sometimes people because it's like they don't want people to – they want a guy like Brock to come in strong. But then when he starts dominating, they make fun of him because they're saying Goldberg. So it's like, you know, what do you want? Because he's looked good. I mean, I agree with you about Heyman not being needed too because, you know, like you said, the heat of this feud is not on Heyman. The whole thing has not been Heyman screwing them over, you know, cheating to win or anything. It's just them getting the shit beat out of him by Brock. So Heyman is sort of just, I mean, they did have the thing where Heyman like sniffed the panties and all that, but it really, and Lita's not even here because she's hurt. So you don't really have that in the back of your mind. So I agree.
I guess they couldn't have tag teamed her then.
They had her in the neck brace.
She's incapacitated. I did love Heyman scurrying to get in the ring to take the pin. He trips on the rope. I thought that was a good touch for him.
Yes. Yeah, and his gigantic tracksuit, his oversized tracksuit. Like, he's great at it. I mean, he plays the role well. It just wasn't really integrated enough in the feud, like you said, to really get the heat that you want from a slimy manager getting his comeuppance, you know?
Well, also, does anyone, at this point, right, does anyone really hate Heyman? Like, I don't know about you, but I loved him as a commentator. Right. Mm-hmm. In 2001, he's got all this cred from ECW and he's come in with Lesnar, but he hasn't really done anything that bad. So it's not like the catharsis of a Bobby Heenan or Slick or, you know, any of those guys that you would like want to maybe I was going to say Ted DiBiase, but no, there was no hate with him. So, but it's not the same, you know, it's not the same kind of hate for a guy like that.
Yeah. Like I said, the main heelish thing he's done is steal Lita's panties, but I mean, in 2002, who knows? That might get you like face, yeah. You know what I mean? Cheers for stealing a woman's panties without her permission and sniffing them on TV. I mean, it's a different world, you know?
JR also hopes post-match that Heyman won't disrobe and pose. Nice little dig. And Brock's music is awful. Like, my God.
Yeah, it's very generic for sure.
I went three, by the way. I don't think I said
okay.
It. Yeah, it's good.
So, all right. So we head to the back again. We have our newest member of the NWO, Booker T, who sees a random woman backstage, gets excited. I think he got her phone number or something like that. So this will be an ongoing saga throughout this show, which I don't know. How do you feel about stuff like this on pay-per-view, Aaron? This seems a little bit too much of a Raw thing to be put on pay-per-view for me.
It's completely unnecessary. That's how I feel about it. This wasn't bad or anything. I think Booker T is like cosplaying in the NWO, but like, I don't know. To me, it made the whole Booker T in the NWO makes no sense. Like, he's named in there by Ric Flair, right? Like, is there any other scenario where an outsider gets to pick a group's member and force that member on the group?
Yeah, it's so forced and it makes no sense. Yeah.
But yeah, like, he sees the girl, he acts as though like he's a cartoon character, like he's never seen a woman before. And then like his jaw drops, his eyes like Google out, and then he just kind of like stands there and shakes his head at the end of like it's such a bizarre, the whole segment's bizarre in that it shouldn't be on pay-per-view, but it's also bizarre in execution. Like, is Booker T a human being anymore?
Yeah, like this, like Booker T has never been with a woman. He's
yeah. Oh, like there might as well be like steam coming out of his ears, and his eyeballs become hearts.
It's true. So we'll see Booker T and his exploits with this woman as we continue the show. So, all right. So we have a big match. I was almost surprised to see it at this point in the card. Stone Cold in a handicap match versus Big Show and Ric Flair, which is a weird thing with all this, is that so Flair is portrayed almost as the leader of the NWO, but when he comes out, he doesn't come out to NWO music. He doesn't have any of the NWO aesthetic. So it's like, it's not cohesive at all for me. Like, if they're going to push this as, it just makes it seem even more thrown together because it is thrown together.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's not cohesive at all. If he's the leader of the NWO, the NWO is so much about the aesthetic and the identity and, you know, the symbol and all that kind of shit. And then he's just regular Ric Flair commanding around the NWO.
If Ric Flair is the leader of the NWO, the NWO is dead.
Yes.
Like, I like Ric Flair, but like, come on now. Like, there can't be anybody more. Like, I can't think of anyone less NWO than Ric Flair.
Yeah, like, and I did love the shot in they did the video package. And so leading into this, Big Show cuts the promo as to why he's turning heel, why he's against Stone Cold. And he says something about, like, when I should have been getting the title shot, I was at whatever, picking up your ugly kid. And then the way they edited the video package is Ryzey saying it. They cut to some footage of him picking up a kid. That was pretty brutal. Whoever's kid that was.
He's blaming Austin for his demotion, right?
Yeah.
Like, what did Austin do? Just be good at his job?
Yeah, his logic in the feud is that every time Austin, the common denominator of him not being like at the top of the card is that Stone Cold is around. Like, he's like, WrestleMania 2000, Stone Cold wasn't there, I was in the main event. And that's his logic.
It sucked.
So his logic is, if he can get rid of Stone Cold, that's when his opportunities come. So.
Well, it's funny, they get rid of Stone Cold and the promotion never really recovers. So his logic was sound.
Yeah.
I love in the video package, Flair says that, I don't know why this bit cracked me up, but he says that Austin will bleed, sweat, and pay the price. And it just feels like the order is all wrong. Like, those words need to be rearranged.
Yeah. No, I did hear that too. Also, when he comes out, so in Flair disrobes, I don't know if you noticed there, but his bulge is out of control. I could not ignore it. It was just like out and about. And it was like, because they had kind of the camera shot. It was right there, like at his midsection. And he just takes off the robe and it was just like, bam, like right in your face. And it was like, all right.
For whatever reason. Me. Normally I notice those things. I didn't this time, but maybe he was backstage trying to woo a Booker T's woman. I'm like, yeah. All right, Rick, time to get out there.
Yes. So we start off show getting taken off his feet by Austin, who, like, the whole first part is Austin, and he comes in like a house of fire trying to kind of go after both of them. And he kind of dominates the first segment, too. I thought Big Show got taken off his feet a little bit too easily for somebody who's supposed to be a giant, but that might be nitpicking. Austin goes for the chair, and it kind of kills his own momentum, I thought, because he was kind of beating up both of them, and then he kind of bails and goes for a chair, and that's when things kind of slow down a little bit. So I thought he kind of killed his own momentum, which was odd. So then they start working him over. Show softens him up. Try and say that. And Flair does some chops and does a low blow. And I really thought they kind of settled into a nice groove whenever Flair got in there. And Flair in 2002, when he's just on top and kind of like he starts dissecting the leg and everything, I actually thought it worked pretty well. Like something about, I don't know what it is about Flair, just the way he puts things together, like when he's on offense, it builds so well. Like even though he's not peak Flair here, I thought the segment of him kind of working over Austin and softening him up was like really good. And then he tags in Show, kind of cuts off Austin's comeback attempts.
And you sigh, mm-hmm. Oh, whenever Show comes in, it's like, oh, all right, here we go.
Exactly. Yeah, because like I was really feeling it whenever it was Flair in there just kind of working over Austin. But I think they worked it well in that I guess it sort of made sense that maybe you couldn't buy that Flair would just by himself could just, take down Austin. So he's got to tag in Show to come soften him up every now and then and kind of cut off Austin's comebacks. But then we get an X-Pac run in. Stone Cold stuns him. Then he stuns Flair. And then he pins Flair. And he wins clean. So give me before I get into like my rating, what did you think of this one, Aaron, the overall match?
Look, just before the match started, I had one question. Why not just do mm-hmm. Flair and Austin alone? Like, yeah. Why not just do that and have, if you want to put them on the outside, like Andre the Giant, at WrestleMania 4 with Randy Savage. There's a lot going on in this match. I find JR hit me with a line early where he said that the Big Show had the strength and mind of a government mule. and this is actually really indicative of like one of my critiques of JR from this era is it just feels like he's really working hard to get his lines in. Mm-hmm. Like Austin's still super over. I hate Big Show in the King Kong Bundy tights. I've never liked it. Austin keeps trying to put a figure four on Flair, and he cannot get it on. Mm-hmm. Like, his legs just don't bend that way anymore. Austin takes a break to drink, and then the ref starts telling him off that he can't drink in the match. I didn't realize that was a rule. Like, I feel like a lot of beer has been drank in that ring. They trade their chops. Flair's got a great Flair flop off the what chops. I don't know, like... I love how, like, when Big Show comes in the first time, Austin does push-ups to get ready, which I thought was funny.
Yes.
Flair, like, drags the ref in for a low blow. And, like, there's no way in hell the referee could not see that low blow. Flair is also just strutting and shaking his dick at the audience a bunch throughout the match. Yeah.
That's kind of where I got – so I see his bulge in the beginning. And in the match, I noticed, I was like, I feel like he knows that his dick is prominent tonight because
– yeah, he's just throwing it out there. Surprised he didn't whip it out. Austin recovers from the low blow way too fast. Ric Flair shakes his dick again, like he does that kind of like pelvic thrust again. And JR goes, I don't know the meaning of that. All right, JR, you've been on a show that they've been yelling suck it for 5 years. Like, Austin also does a backslide on Flair. And the only reason I bring it up is there couldn't be more of a contrast between how tight Eddie Guerrero's backslide was in this one. Like this one looked like just two guys laying there. So Austin stuns all three to win. Big Show takes the stunner by just standing up. He takes a stunner too. Why wasn't it enough for Austin to just beat two guys? Why did they have to run down a third guy for him to beat also?
And to me, it kind of kills the feud a little bit because... You know, Austin just comes in and just even with the X-Pac running, he still wins clean, just stuns everybody and wins. And they've been building this since the draft, the tension between Austin and Flair. And now he just beat Flair. Flair's, you know, his muscle and then X-Pac all in one match. So it's like, where do you go from here?
Yeah. Yeah, it's terrible booking. I think they should have just done Flair Austin. And then you could latch on, or done Big Show Austin, and then you build to Flair or something. I mean, I don't want to armchair book this thing, but to me, like, Big Show just hurt the match. I even thought, like, if you're going to put someone in there, put X-Pac in there. Like, I'd rather see X-Pac and Austin wrestle than Big Show and Austin, so that might have been interesting. I went 2.5 on it. I thought it was kind of just nothing, which is what 2.5 is for me.
Yeah, I'm at 2.5 too. It, like you said earlier, and it was like, it was all over the place. It kind of felt disjointed at times. I thought there were times when it was really selling into a nice groove, like when Flair was in there, it was just Flair and Austin.
Yeah.
But there was just too much random stuff. And that's kind of been a thing with Austin this period. It's just a little bit too much going on. And he's a little bit too dominant. And it just, I'm not feeling it. It just doesn't feel right. Like, it's not horrible, because I think even him sort of checked out. Like I've said on this podcast many times, I think him checked out is still solid. It's just not, you know, you're so used to his stuff being so good and having so much heat and
yeah,
and it's just not there.
It's and it's weird, because I actually think the problem in the match is Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it and to give you some spoilers, when I eventually do 2002, I'm pretty sure Austin's going to finish in my bottom five wrestlers of the year. Which to me seems blasphemous, but I think he's got a really strange 2002.
Yeah, it has been so far, absolutely. This whole feud has been, like you said, I've said it before, I like the idea of Flair Austin, but they're just not doing anything interesting with it. Or even Flair Show, or don't do the NWO thing. If you want to have Flair and Show together, just let them be like a little staple, but don't call it NWO, because if you're going to do NWO, you really got to go all in on it and it be the NWO, which I don't think you need to do that.
You can't do it without Hall or Nash. Mm-hmm. Or Hogan, really. Like, you got to have at least one of those people involved. Otherwise, it's like, do we really give a shit about the NWO with Booker T, X-Pac, and Big Show?
No. No one does. And it's like, I think there's a lot of interesting places they could go with Flair Austin besides trying to rehash McMahon Austin. Like, you could use that Flair was his favorite wrestler. You could go back to their time in WCW when he was just starting out. Like, there's a lot of avenues you could explore with it that are a lot more interesting than Flair being some leader of the NWO and he's an authority figure, which feels super stale.
Yeah. You could do something with Austin where he's trying to work his way back up to world title contention.
Yeah.
Maybe Flair.
Sorry.
No, go on.
No, I was just going to say they've killed the feud dead, you know?
Yeah. And it had potential. Like, I think the idea of Austin and Flair is really interesting. Like, we'd never really seen it. Like, Flair could still go, not as well as could before, but he could still go. He had good matches this year. His match with Undertaker was really good. His match with Vince was really fun, too.
Yeah, it's what could have been.
Well, that's the story of 2001, 2002. What could have been? You just wait a little bit to do that invasion. It could have been the best thing ever. Or had a bit of humility.
So... All right, so we continue on. We have a big match for the big stipulation, Edge versus Angle in a hair versus hair match. They have been feuding since the draft, which started off as they recap in this package with Edge making fun of Angle's shirt, which says, "You suck." Before we get into the match, Aaron, what are your thoughts on... I've been going back and forth with this Edge character as I go through these shows, because I kind of like him a little bit, but then sometimes I think he's kind of corny and I'm not really sure how to feel about him, because they're presenting him as this baby face against Kurt, where he's kind of a smart ass, but he's a little bit cheesy too. And I haven't felt like I've completely bought into the Edge character in this point.
Well, you won't get any arguments from me. I've never been an Edge. I like him now. I think it's really cool now. Mm-hmm. I never got it. There's just something about it that I never got. And I think it's because of the performer himself. Like, we'll see later on when you hear him talk, there's something disingenuous about how he speaks. He doesn't look comfortable, like, in his body when he talks and moves. Like, he doesn't feel like a real person. And I think that really hurts. That, and I think they're trying way too hard with him. Like, there's a shot of him in the pre-match video where, like, he's wearing like leather pants and like a black button-up shirt, and it's like, wow, that's just a snapshot of 2002 right there. Like, everything that was popular, boom, right there. So yeah, I'm with you. I'm not feeling this character. I never did, and maybe never will.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the feud has been carried by Angle and him being such a good heel that even if Edge is sort of mediocre as a babyface, it works because Angle just has so much heat. He's just so good as a heel that it still works. So we start off, it's kind of hot and heavy in the beginning, and they kind of slow down with a chin lock, and then we sort of go into, I mean, to me, a lot of this match was like lots of big moves, lots of near falls. You get a ref bump where the ref actually gets speared. We get multiple spears for a near fall based on the ref being out. So we get kind of a delay in the count. We get an Angle slam for a near fall, which to me, that was sort of what this match was for the most part, or the meat of the middle of the match was like big move, near fall, big move, near fall, which depending on how you feel, some people think that that's sort of the weakness of Angle in his matches, is that he can kind of do this sort of thing where it's like all the stuff looks really good, but sometimes it can sort of devolve into just, you know, big spot to with near falls. I did like the finish though. I thought the finish was really cool, the way Edge sort of kicked out of the ankle lock and then he sort of rolls him up, and they had a lot of nice cool reversals sort of in the ending. So I like the ending. I've been torn on this whole feud because this match to me was sort of like the last match on pay-per-view with them at Backlash, in that I thought it was very good, but I know a lot of these matches between these two are kind of seen as like classic, like a lot of people go like four and above on it, and it just never gets there for me, and I don't know what it is. I really like the finishing sequence. I think all the spots look good and the near falls were cool. But I don't feel like it ever reached, there wasn't enough of a story to it, I guess, for me to go. And this is kind of how I felt about the last match, that it was a lot of cool moves, a lot of energy, cool finishing sequence, but just not enough. Like if I compared to the match earlier between Eddie and RVD, to me that had just had a lot more storytelling to it. And so I liked that one a bit better. So I only went 3.25 on this one.
Yeah, I'm at 3.5. But I will echo what you said about it doesn't stack up to the first match on the show for me anyway. What I did like, there's a couple things I did like. The whole critique of Angle about how it's like big move, pin, but it's kind of the only match on the show like that, which I think helps. Mm-hmm. It's like now where you get a bunch of those matches. Like I think this kind of makes it different and lets it stand out a bit. It's also the first match on the show so far that started with a lockup, which I like. And that feels like a small detail, but I think they actually did a really good job of starting every match differently on this show so far. Whereas today, every single match kind of starts the same way. They go through the same, some similar sequence at the beginning. I thought this was interesting. I like the urgency at the beginning, trying to pin right away. I thought that was the kind of story at first, was that like they're just trying to end this match to get the pin. They get into a headlock spot, which I think goes on a bit too long, which I think hurts the match a bit for me. Edge is doing his like sequence of like, you know, where he drops him down and slants him from behind. I think Angle's kickouts are so awesome. I think he's probably the best ever person at kicking out like right before the three count. Edge gets the visual spear pin with the spear. Angle hits him with a spear, and I think it actually looks better. Like Angle's spear edges. I'll mirror what you said too. I like the ending. I like the roll up. I thought it was good. But again, I just. For me to get into a match, I don't get when people are like 4 stars, 4.5 either for this. It just doesn't get there for me. And I think it's because I'm just so not invested in the Edge character. Like maybe if I cared more, I don't want to see Kurt Angle lose to Edge. It doesn't feel right. Like I already have trouble watching people lose to Kurt Angle because like he could destroy all of them. But like Edge is just a bridge too far when I put in how phony I think he is too. And like I said, I like him now. I think he's more well-rounded now. But I'll concur with that.
Yeah, I kind of get what you're saying because I felt myself feeling the same way. Like I wasn't as worried as I should have been that he was going to get his head shaved. You know, like I felt like I wasn't buying into feeling sympathetic towards him and I wasn't worried enough that he was going to lose it. And so I agree with you. It kind of takes a little bit away from the match for me.
Yeah, and, if you don't care, If you don't care about one of the guys, then forget it. The match could be like at a. That's why to me a match like Hogan Andre stands the test of time because you care about both guys, right? A match like this, maybe it's technically better, but like, you know. And then Angle runs away. So like.
Yeah, that's our post-match deal with this, is that Angle runs away. I do think Angle did a great job of, in this feud, has really elevated Edge, if nothing else, like, as an in-ring presence. Like, by showing that Edge could go in there and hang with Angle. I think he still has a lot of work to do with the character, Edge does, but I think it has accomplished elevating Edge as somebody who could hang with, like, an in-ring guy like Angle, which is good. Right. But, so Angle... we kind of get teased that he's going to get get his head shaved, but then he sort of escapes and scurries away behind the stage, and we will find them. This will be an ongoing angle throughout the show. Which, speaking of ongoing angles, we smash cut now to the Marriott, and we have Booker, who is trying to bed this woman that he met at the arena earlier, except the lights go out. We hear Goldust, and the lights go on, and Goldust is in the bed with him. Which startles Booker T. He gets angry, and Booker T runs out of the back of the hotel room. We see his bare ass, and Goldust is sad because he wants him back. So we continue the saga of Goldust wanting Booker T to be his tag team partner. I enjoy the chemistry between them, and I think they're funny. It's just I just think it's out of place here, you know?
Yeah, I don't need this at all.
Yeah, and... this is supposed to be like your hot new member of the NWO, and he's in this goofy skit. It's like, do you really want to do the NWO thing with him, or you want to do the Goldust angle? Because this is not really making him look like, you know, Flair stud that he picked to be added to the NWO when he's running with his ass hanging out in the hotel room.
A great ass, though. Really great ass. That man's in shape. He's done a lot of squats down in Harlem. Oh, no, he's from Houston. I always think he's from Harlem because of Harlem Heat.
Yeah. So we'll continue on, and we have our big Hell in the Cell match, big grudge match between Chris Jericho and Triple H. I like the video packages on the show. I like this one to set this all up to sort of recap their feud. In the entrances, I made a note that Triple H's tan is just completely out of control here. He looks like he's about to blister. A lot going on in this match, too. I thought it was a little bit weird that they started with some sort of straight wrestling a little bit to start off, considering this is this blood feud. But... Then they really start using the cage. Both guys start bleeding pretty not far into the match. Like Jericho's bleeding from the shoulder, which I thought looked pretty cool. Then they pull out a ladder. Like, I feel like that's going to be me recapping this match. It's just they pull out a ladder. Then he throws it out of the ring onto Triple H. Jericho starts taking control. If you have anything, jump in, Aaron, if there's anything missing.
But I got to start at the beginning. So, like, you go ahead. This is going to be an interesting match.
Yeah, so Jericho really starts taking control. But then they really start playing up Jericho's arm after Triple H gets to the steps. He throws the steps at Jericho's arm. And I always think it's funny when these refs in a match like Hell in a Cell, which is like this blood feud, you know, the most dangerous structure, and you have Tim White going, keep it in the ring, guys. Keep it in the ring.
He says it a billion times in the match. Like, why?
Why does he care? Like, what is he expecting? He's like, all right, Hell in a Cell, you guys are never going to go out the ring. This is going to be a nice, clean, pure wrestling match. It's so absurd.
No wonder this guy tried to kill himself.
Well... he almost kills himself in this match because he takes a bump off of the apron, flies into the cage, does a blade job. Tim White comes up bleeding from the head. Kyoto comes in, tries to, I guess, come to save Tim White. They open up the cage, which of course allows them out. Before that, Triple H gets the sledgehammer, hits Jericho with the sledgehammer. Jericho's crawling around. Triple H reverses in DDT. So they go out to the announce table. Triple H reverses it in DDT Jericho through the table. Then they climb up to the top. Somewhere along the way, they get a barbed wire 2x4. They get to the top of the cage, which in this spot, I thought that people on top of the cage is always a cool visual, but – I don't, it's tough now because your expectation as somebody who's seen Mick Foley go off the top and get, you know, slammed through the cage is it's sort of your expectation is if you're going to go to the top, somebody's going to fall through, and they don't really do that. And I'm not saying they should have, but it's just weird now to go up top if you're not going to do that. It's, you know, it's a weird vibe. And it's always weird when they go up there too, because you could tell it's extremely difficult for them to move up there because you're trying to walk on chain link fence.
I don't want it to break and fall.
Yeah. So they're kind of stumbling around trying to get their feet. They did kind of tease it with the backdrop that someone's going through until finally Triple H hits the pedigree on the top of the cell for the win. And they actually count the pin on top, which I didn't really know you could do, but apparently you can.
They didn't keep it in the ring.
No, they did not. They did not listen to Tim White. So this was such a hard match for me to rate because I appreciated everything, the amount of effort that they put in, and they were pulling out all the stops, which I think, you know, it was like good for them. But at the same time, I thought it was just it was just so much stuff that they did. I mean, everything I just listed, the ladder, the sledgehammer, like, did we really need the sledgehammer? It really didn't lead to anything.
Never.
It's like Jericho gets hit with this. Yeah. Like he just gets hit with the sledgehammer. He's out. He starts crawling and they move on to the next thing. Like I know that it's like, I get the idea. They wanted to unload the tank. It's a big match. They wanted to come off like a big, like they were walking the line between, it's tough to walk the line between something feeling like an all out war or feeling kind of plotting. And I thought this match was kind of going a little bit of both ways for me. It wasn't completely plotting, but it also didn't completely feel like the best Hell in a Cell matches where you feel like you're watching a complete war. So I was very torn. I still thought it was a good brawl, but it never clicked as being very cohesive to me. It never really had the intensity. Despite all the craziness, it felt like they were doing a lot of stuff, but it never felt the level of violence or intensity that I thought, which is crazy to say it wasn't violent, you know? I don't know. I went 3.5 because I didn't know what to do with this match, honestly.
Well, I'll tell you what I want to do with this match. So look, I'm going to sum up. Well, I'm going to go through it. This is the only one I'll go through too with my notes because there's a lot. It's funny, eh? Because I feel like the way you described it is not at all how I saw it. So I think this actually might be. I hope this is interesting anyway. But in the promo before the match, the whole Triple H problem for me is summed up really nicely. When Triple H says, "You think six guys can beat me up? You think Jericho can hurt me? You think you can put me in Hell in a Cell? Like, could you sell something? Could you sell it? Maybe something is dangerous or important? Like, do we need you to be superior to everything in every way at every time? Like, Hulk Hogan showed weakness. He would say, like, oh, my God, I might lose to Andre the Giant. Like, this guy, this is the problem. Sell something. They come out. The Hell in a Cell starts with, like, slow lockups and slow punching. And slow throwing Chris Jericho around. And then slow trying to slam him into the cage. Jericho hits a forearm out of nowhere to take control. Nothing happens. Triple H just overpowers him again to take control. Triple H slowly rams him into both sides of the cage. And like, to me, nothing says Hell in a Cell like using the cage outside as ropes and just hitting clotheslines on the floor. Like, you can't tell me this is a brutal match if this is what you're doing. And look, I get the idea it's supposed to be devastating, but it doesn't look that way. And to give you some, I don't know if you noticed this, but I certainly noticed this. 5 minutes in, the crowd is dead. Like, they're making no noise. There's barely any cheers. No one's counting along with the pins. There's nothing happening. Triple H gets to do his Irish rip reversal spot where he flips over. There's no rules in the match, but all they're doing is punching. So they're not even taking advantage of the stipulation, at least early on. And I why have the stipulation if you're not going to do it? And they keep like reversing each other's moves. Like so one guy will do an Irish rip into the cage. Then the other guy will do an Irish rip into the cage. Like it's like when George Lucas said the fucking Star Wars prequels were like poetry. That's what I feel like. It's like you're not actually like doing anything of substance here. Jericho hits a slow and horrible slingshot into the cage where Triple H's back is over the stairs. That's when Jericho takes it to the ladder, which you're talking about. But it's the worst possible weapon in this space. He can't move it. You see him just struggling to straighten it out. And, like, there's chairs there, too. There's sledgehammers, which we'll get to. And, like, I find so quickly into this match, we're already at Triple H, hit a big move, lay around. hit a big move, lay around. Triple H is cut. Jericho grates him. It looks like shit. Jericho slowly punches him around the ring. He throws the ladder into the ring. And then Triple H like does this thing where like he kind of pantomimes falling out of the ring. It looks like a child's play. Triple H gets a chair. He hits him once and then walks around the ring. And then they're back to exchanging punches. They keep going back to just slowly exchanging punches. Jericho hits a good bulldog on the ladder. That's fine. Jericho tries to pick up the stairs. He clearly can't pick them up. And then he does the most, like, when he does the walk towards Triple H into, like, the drop toe hold, the whole thing is just, like, it just feels like such going through the motions. Like, okay, as soon as he picked them up, you're like, okay, he's going to do the drop toe hold. But then they don't even bother to make it look like, they're not even pretending to look like it's happening in the moment. It looks like they've practiced it before. Then they walk slowly around the ring. I can't tell how many times I was like, oh, they're just walking around the ring. Then Triple H slams him into the cage. And, like, the best bump is taken by Tim White. That's the best bump in the match.
Yeah, it's the killer bump.
Yeah. Like, and then Jericho beats up Tim White, which, and I mean, it must be nice. It must be nice for Jericho to have an opponent who sells for him. Like, Tim White's blade job is the best match in the match. We get a spine buster, just like every other match, the regular match. We get some lying around. Triple H gets a chair into Jericho's face. Triple H goes into the ring, gets a sledge. So here, like these fucking sledgehammers, man. Like, I loathe the sledgehammer so much. My buddy Reg, who I do Montreal to Memphis with, told me once that he went to a hardware store and, like, touched the sledgehammer on his head, and he had a headache for the rest of the day. And, like, I buy it. I don't know why he did that, but I buy it. And it's funny because when Triple H grabs the sledgehammer, he gets in the ring with it, and no one cheers. So he puts his arms in the air, and then everybody cheers. So they're, like, begging for the crowd's reaction here. And even then, the pop is really tepid. He fucking hits Jericho in the head with a sledgehammer. Like, he winds up and hits him in the head with a sledgehammer. And within, what, like, 30 seconds, Jericho's crawling around? The guy should be dead. And then he could get up and slam the door in Triple H's face. And then, like, Jericho can't even bang Triple H's head on the table properly. The DDT on the table is the big spot in the match. More lying around. And the problem I have with the lying around is that I think there's a time for that when there's stakes. Like, you know, the Undertaker streak. You know, they're lying around. I get it. If it's a title match, okay, sure, you know. But there's no actual stakes to this match. So this should just be a war. Triple H gets the barbed wire 2x4 for some reason. It's a good thing the 2x4 has a strap on it so he can put it around his wrist when he climbs up the cage.
Convenient.
It's good that he planned all this out beforehand. And then, like, he puts it on his wrist and he climbs to the top. But before he gets to the top, he throws it up there. And Jericho just takes it and starts hitting him with it. Makes no goddamn sense. JR then says, I've seen barbed wire tear animals apart, which I need some context for this. Like, so they're hitting, like, and so they're hitting each other. And I love what you said about them being on top of the cage, because I thought it plays into this. They're hitting each other on top of the cage with this barbed wire. But because they're on top of the cage, the camera can't get in tight. So it doesn't look right. Like, there's something wrong with it. Terrible Boston Crab on top. Jericho, JR just keeps yelling, for the love of God, they're on top of the cage. But I don't understand why the Boston Crab hurts more on the top of the cage. Like, it's not like he's, like, got the bar. Of course, Triple H powers out, low blows him. Pedigree gets reversed to a backdrop. We're just doing a normal match up there. Jericho fucking hits him in the head with the 2x4 and gets two. Then Triple H does a baseball bat swing to the head and with a 2x4 with barbed wire, and that gets two. But the pedigree on a substance softer than the surface of the mat that they usually do it on gets three. I wrote, fuck this match, and it's 1 star. I fucking hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. And they're talking about how Chris Jericho took it to the game like no human has ever done before. Like, there's a million better examples of this. I think there's a couple problems. The big problem is you can't promote this match using Mick Foley and Shawn Michaels and then not deliver anything resembling that. Like, I don't want either guy to hurt each other, but, like, I remember in the build-up to this match, they're showing the off the cage, they're throwing this, they're throwing that. So that's your expectation going in, right? I think this is the first time that Triple H is trying to carry a Hell in a Cell on his own. Right. And there's going to be many more of this. But how did that happen after this performance? It's not like it was that good. And then the match fucking ends and Triple H is in the ring for like, it feels like a fucking eternity. Anyway, I hated it. I'm sorry I talked so long about it. I really hated it.
No, that was great. That's good. I get what you mean. Because part of the thing I had with this match that bothered me was it felt like they were trying to do like the greatest hits of Hell in a Cell. Like you said, they even mentioned Foley and Shawn Michaels and everything in the promos leading up to it. So you kind of have that in your head. And they're just like trying to empty the tank. And it's just a little bit too much. And, you know, obviously I heard it a ton for you, which I understand. I kind of expected going in that you probably wouldn't be a fan. And I wasn't a huge fan of it either. It's a weird thing for me because I was torn because it's like, man, they did a lot of stuff. But to your point, too, it's like it was a lot of stuff. But was it for what reason?
None of it made sense. Like nothing built upon anything that happened before. It's like, okay, he got hit with a sledgehammer. Oh, now he's climbing a cage. Like, wait, those two things can't happen.
And it's difficult because, too, is that Triple H is the face here. And so he does kind of take, you know, he looks beat up and everything, but he never really gets to that point of, it's weird because he plays a babyface character, but it's so much about him being a badass and like dominating people. So it's very hard for him to, I know it's something I think you've mentioned again. I know it's something you bring up a lot about him. It's hard for him to get sympathy because he doesn't, you know, he presents himself as this dominant badass. And he doesn't show enough, and so you just kind of expect him to come dominate, and I don't know if the crowd always connects with it.
Well, I mean, it never worked, right? He never worked as a top face. Like, the proof is in the pudding. Like, I mean, even like when you look at the top faces of the company, like even a guy like Austin, who ate people up, he showed vulnerability. Like, you felt like you could get to him or something could put him off his quote-unquote game. Hogan, like, would be very upset if a friend betrayed him. Like, this guy just – he's like a statue. Like, he laughs. He's the funniest. He's the strongest. He's the smartest. I don't know why he's the smartest. He just hits people with hammers. Like, sorry. I don't want to get on a Triple H rant. Again, I do them enough on my own shows.
It's okay. But, yeah, this sledgehammer to me was pretty egregious as a quick transition spot.
Yeah, transition spot. I have a problem with it as a finish. Imagine the transition spot.
Yeah. Okay, so after that, that war in the Hell in the Cell, we cut to Angle running and hiding from Edge. He's still on the run trying to stop his head from being shaved. And so it's just Angle kind of running backstage, and Edge is looking for him. We cut to WWE The World, where Tori and Maven are on a date. And Tori says that she can now wear whatever she wants or nothing at all because she doesn't have to wear the geisha outfit, which causes Maven to do a spit take. I thought this was kind of uncomfortable. I don't know how you felt it, Aaron.
Well, I'm like, there's no way Tori's banging Maven, right? But then again, you find out she's dating Billy Kidman, and who knows, right? Maybe I have a chance.
What did JR say like here? He's like, do you like it dry or something? And he calls King jealous. I forgot what he said right here. He had some line about, do you like it dry, JR? And obviously King was horny for Tori, as usual.
In fairness, we all were. It was fine. We got it, King. We got it.
All right. So I'm assuming they just threw that in so he could get the cell out of there.
I guess.
Yeah, so, all right, big tag team title match. Billy and Chuck versus Rikishi and a mystery opponent.
Billy and Chuck come out to a monster reaction.
Yeah, they're over. Billy and Chuck are over. They're pretty much the only real tag team, so, at this point. Which is why they have to have Rikishi with a mystery partner chosen by Vince, I believe. And one note I had is that Rikishi comes out and he is just so moist. He is just sopping wet as always, just dripping. And it is revealed that Rikishi's partner is Rico, which my reaction was just that this is stupid. Yeah. It makes no sense. We have no, it to me, it just shows the sorry state of the tag division that this is what they have to do. And another thing that hurt this is, so this pretty much gives us, because obviously Rico is with Billy and Chuck. it gives us three essentially de facto handicap matches on this show. Because you have the Austin match, you have the Heyman thing, which is pretty much a handicap match because Heyman's not a wrestler. And now you have Rikishi facing Billy and Chuck with their manager as his partner. So it's just way too many. I mean, a lot of people would say one handicap match is too many, but you pretty much have three matches with this sort of dynamic. And it's just, I'm over it by this point, especially with this where you're like, this is stupid. You know, you're just doing this because we have no real tag teams because you split them all up in the draft. So I was not going into this with high expectations. And it really wasn't much of a match. What it boils down to, I'm not going to say much about what happens before this, but the ending is that Rico accidentally nails Billy, and I think it was like a super kick or something, and then Rikishi ends up winning. So now Rikishi is the tag team champions. He has both the titles, which I was like, it was not an entry. I kind of get where they're going with the angle of, like, you know, one guy winning both titles because they screwed up or something like that. But there was really not enough of a feud to warrant this. Rikishi is not, I mean, besides his dancing, you know, that's over, but he's really not that over. I just came out of this feeling like you need to get some real teams. We need real teams. This felt like a SmackDown, like, filler angle that they're going to pay off next week and not a pay-per-view tag team title match. So I went half a star on this.
Yeah, this is pretty, I mean, the in-ring stuff was fine. I think it shows how good Howard Finkel is when he said he had to introduce the wording of how he introduced it. And now introducing, chosen by Mr. McMahon, Rikishi's partner. Like, there's just too many words to get out there. This was dumb. He does get the belt though, Rico, because as he's leaving, I think Billy or Chuck says, take your belt. And like, he kind of like slinks back and takes the tag title.
That is true. Yeah, he does.
It's a really funny little thing that he does, which is the best part of the match. This is nothing. Billy's bumping like crazy for Rikishi, which is cool. They just give no shits about the tag division. I went two, but two for me is not good. So there you go. And then the production, but the production value on the dance after is quite high.
Yeah, he gets pyro. He gets the whole nine. They even do this on like SmackDown every time he comes out. And I really think it's a big reason why they keep him around for the dancing.
Why else?
So it just, and it's just so weird because they have so much talent. Like, you can find some tag teams somewhere. I mean, even they had Maven and Snow, which, I mean, it's not the greatest thing ever, but they threw them together, but they never really did much with it. But say they could have been a tag team, you know, like Mentor and whatever, like something. It's better than Rikishi by himself.
Or just give Rikishi a partner.
Yeah.
Where's Scott Taylor?
Like anyone. And also, before we move out of this, JR at one point said that Rico's pants look like the seat covers from a Chevy. So your point of JR getting his lines in.
Yeah.
Another one. All right, so that was that. We continue on. We get the Angle Edge saga continues. Angle jumps Edge and brings him out back to the ring. They kind of start fighting by the barber chair, and then Edge gets a sleeper hold on him, which, of course, in the old Brutus the Barber Beefcake move, he puts him in the chair, and finally Kurt gets shaved. These things always bother me in that, like, so they've been fighting, so Angle's all sweaty. Just something about those clippers going through his sweaty hair just helped oog me out a little bit. Yeah, like, it was just very uncomfortable. And I got real nervous when Edge, I think like JR or something even said it too. It was like, oh, wait, he's going to do that? When he had like the straight razor, I was like, oh, it was Edge?
Way too fast.
Yes. It's like they were telling him, like, all right, let's get out and get it done. It's like, especially because you have the professional barber right there. Like, why not let him do it?
He could probably go faster anyway. That man is trained to do that.
Yeah, and so I thought it was, you know, it's always a little unbelievable in these things that Angle's going to be passed out from the sleep hole for five straight minutes, but I guess you have to figure out what,
cutting his hair.
Yeah, but I guess they have to find a way to do it. I thought it was a nice ending too, as the crowd chants "You're bald," and Angle pretty much starts weeping and like runs off from this. And yeah, I was fine with the, Like, what did you think of them dragging it out like this and not doing it earlier? It was fine, I guess, because it kind of gives you a little bit of a tease, like maybe Angle's going to sneak his way out of it. So I kind of like that they dragged it out like this.
It's the good version of what that Booker T skit is. That Booker T skit felt like time wasting on pay-per-view, but this actually paid off an angle on the pay-per-view. So for me, it was fine.
Yeah, I'm in the same camp. Yeah, for sure.
I do find that like the whole thing was like a little bit ruined by Edge's hokiness. Like when he grabs the mic and he's like, "From now on, Kurt, we're not gonna chant 'You suck.'" Like, this is where I feel he doesn't feel like a person.
Yeah, he's very cornball at times, a lot of times, and that's my main issue with him. It's like they're trying to make him be Mr. Cool Guy, but a lot of times he just comes off as like goofy in a bad way. Not like goofy likable, just sort of cheesy goofball.
Yeah. But like, you can be goofball and like Kurt Angle's a goofball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it never felt forced. It felt like, okay, this guy's a bit of an idiot.
Yeah. Edge, it feels very like he's trying to play the cool guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to play cool as opposed to just being cool.
But now we are now in Bald Angle.
Yeah. And he looks fine. They're talking about how embarrassing it is. He looks perfectly fine, like, right away.
Yeah, like, that was what it was. Like, in the promos leading up to it, they do, like, the thing where they do, like, the effect where you see him both bald, and it just didn't register on me at all, because they just show Angle without the hair. I'm like, yeah, that's just what he looks like. He's looked like that for, like, 20 years.
Yeah. Did it bother you at all that, like, when they first started the match, we didn't talk about this, but Taz and Michael Cole introduced a lot of these matches. And Taz is like, oh, man, it's going to be so embarrassing for Kurt Angle to shave his head. Taz is saying this? Like,
yeah, and I kind of thought they had Taz and Cole, like, introducing it, and I thought they were going to be on commentary, and they, you know, I guess they brought him there, and but I don't think they got to be on commentary.
Nope, they pulled him right off. There'll be no bald people on commentary tonight, Taz. Yes.
Okay, so our big main event for the world title. Undertaker versus Hulk Hogan, a battle of legends. So we start off, Taker immediately starts with like the weight belt and like, which I was like, how is he getting away with this? Cause he whips him for a good 2 to 3 minutes. So immediately I was like, why is the ref? Like, how is this not, you know,
yeah.
He could just whip him with the belt repeatedly for like the first 3 minutes of the match and he gets no consequence. So that was a weird start.
Do you think, has anyone else ever whipped, because Hogan ends up whipping him with the belt later, right? But, like, has anyone else ever whipped Undertaker with a belt? I mean, besides his father, presumably, like.
Yeah, I don't know. Not that I can recall.
It's just a weird thing, like, seeing Undertaker get whipped and humiliated in a match.
It is. It's not true. It's not really his thing, I was saying. You're right. So this, like, Undertaker kind of goes through his goes through some of his spots. They do a rough looking superplex. I thought Taker kind of works the leg. He does like you mentioned earlier, the terrible half crab. We get another one here. Oh, he puts the half crab on Hogan. Looks really bad.
And JR screams kind of, like, is he gonna give up? Like, it's not even on him.
Yeah, the whole match was just Hogan's really limited, and I didn't think, like, Taker, I don't think, is the one to carry somebody like a very limited Hogan in this sort of thing. So I just thought the whole match was sort of plodding. They were just kind of going from spot to spot, but nothing really looked particularly good because Hogan is just like, it doesn't look like Hogan can bend at all. Like, it looks like his legs don't bend. So he kind of, the way he moves is very, like, robotic. And I just didn't think this one quite, for whatever reason, it didn't have the feel of the Backlash match. Like, I don't know if it's just because I kind of fit, you just could kind of feel that Taker was going to win and this was the end of the Hogan thing, but it just didn't quite have the atmosphere of the last match. I guess because you sort of get the idea that the reign's coming to an end. But we get, Taker gets the chair, we get the boot into the chair. Vince comes out and they, Hogan throws Vince in, Hogan punches him. He leg drops him, but then he gets hit with the chair and choke slam, which the choke slam had like no elevation on it. And, that would end the match. So not a very good match. It felt very ho-hum to me. Like, obviously, neither, like, this is not going to be some work great classic. I'm interested to see where they go with it from now on, now that Hogan's not champ. And I think at least it did sort of, and they kind of did this on the SmackDown, the go-home SmackDown, is we're getting into the first sort of, the first stages of the Hogan-Vince feud, which I thought was like the best part of this match, is that we're going to get that soon. So as a match, I went one star on it because it just wasn't much of a match, which I don't think anybody expected it to be. So what'd you think of this one, Aaron?
Do you know how old Undertaker was here?
I'm going to go with 39.
37.
Age of death.
You're close. 37. It's crazy because I remember this time being like, fuck, he's too old to be wrestling anymore.
Yeah.
He's only 37. Yeah, this match, a lot of punches, a lot of kicks. The shitty half crab you mentioned. Hogan even hulks up, and there's not much of a reaction. But they're with him when he starts punching, and then the pointing with the U. He hits him with the boot, the leg drop. But then he, instead of pinning him, dances around and claps. It's always a strange spot. I love Vince getting hit with the big boot and then selling it by laying with his eyes open as though he's dead. Taker hits Hogan with a chair too, like right, so hard that like it knocks Earl Hebner over. But like, how does Hebner not hear that chair shot? I will say this: it was slow, it was plodding, but nothing didn't make sense. Like for me, so I went 2.5, which is kind of just, it's like, it was a match. I don't think it was great. I certainly didn't hate it. Undertaker after the match puts the belt on crooked. I hated that. Like it already looked really bad on him because he's wearing all black. And then JR's just screaming about Hogan having his heart ripped up, not ripped out, ripped up, which I thought was interesting. And then Taker beats the shit out of him and like puts the chair in his throat. So yeah, I mean, whatever. I don't want to see any more Hogan and Undertaker. I'm good. I never have to see that again, except if they bring it back for like a Saudi show, which they will at some point. 2.5. It's fine. Way like, it's funny because this is the match where it's like, this is the match going into the pay-per-view that I thought would be like, oh man, it has an Undertaker Hogan match, but that's not the match that upset me. And I guess what I was thinking of was the match next month where Undertaker fights Triple H. I'm sure if I were to watch that one, I'm sure it'd be pretty bad too.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was just kind of what you'd expect from this. I think it's just your expectations going in is you're not expecting anything amazing. It was a decent feud going in. It had a decent storyline going in with, I really liked when Taker beat him up with the belt going into it. So it had some good. And I mean, to give Hogan credit, I mean, he is trying here. I mean,
he's working.
He did a superplex. So,
yeah.
So that ends our show. So the Hogan championship run, nostalgia run, has seemingly come to a close. So this show, man, this is a weird show to rate as an overall show because I did like a good bit of stuff on it. I liked the Edge angle match pretty well. I really liked the opener. Even the Austin handicap match, I didn't think was like terrible as a match. I don't like the everything around it. The storyline, everything is not great, but as a match, it was fine enough. And I even was okay. I didn't hate the Hell in a Cell quite as much as you, but even somehow I feel like the match ratings don't add up to, like, I gave the show a 5 out of 10 right down the middle. And I feel like the way I rated the matches, it should be higher, but for some reason, it just, something about the show didn't click for me. I don't know what it was. And then the last sort of hour, you get that Rikishi thing, which is like nothing. And then the title match is, you know, sort of like, you know, you kind of already know what's going to happen, and it wasn't a great match. So the last hour is kind of just going through the motions a little bit. So I don't know. I went 5 out of 10 on this one, Aaron.
Yeah, 5 feels fair. That's what I'm going to give it to, because I do really like the opener. I liked Edge and Angle. I was fine with the Austin stuff. The women's match was dumb, but it was short. I just think it's so hard to come back for me from that Hell in the Cell. Mm-hmm. And where it's placed on the card. Because, like, I feel in that match, your intelligence is insulted to a point where you're no longer ready to accept to suspend the disbelief for anything. It's how I felt when I watched the stupid Seth Rollins Rey Mysterio eye match. I was like, all right, well, I can't watch the rest of the show. Like I'm out of it now, and I'll never be able to get back in. And that's kind of how I felt about watching the Hell in a Cell. But I think 5 is fair because there is some really good stuff on the show.
Yeah, they have to get the main event sorted out now that Hogan's done, which I think you alluded to. We'll see where they go with it. I think you can kind of tell where they're going to go with it. But
oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to give spoilers.
No, but it's the undercard is chugging along pretty well, and it kind of really buoys the show, I think.
Well, so. And it's funny because they're about to really improve the main event scene.
Mm-hmm.
Not next month, but right after that. Like, okay, we're getting a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I can't wait for that. So, all right, to wrap us up, Aaron, let's go. We have a few awards for this show. Best match. I had the opener, Eddie and RVD.
Yeah, me too. I was expecting going in for it to be Edge and Angle, but no, RVD Guerrero.
Yeah, same. I like just a touch more. Best moment I had. This one, because I couldn't think of too many huge moments on here. I had Angle reacting, like when he runs off weeping after getting his head shaved, which it's weird because you would think the title win would be, but it just, I don't know. It didn't feel like that big of a moment. It felt kind of expected, and I knew that was going to happen. So I went Angle getting shaved.
I went Angle, but when he was hiding in the makeup chair. Because, again, I found like it was not a moment-heavy show at all.
Yeah, definitely not. LVP, I think I know where you're going to go with this one, Aaron. I'm going to go – see, this is a tough one too because it's like for LVP, I don't want to go with like Stacy because it's like what – I mean, it's Stacy. They're putting
– 5 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So, man, I was tough on that. I kind of want to go Taker, but because I feel like he maybe could have got better out of Hogan, but I'll go Taker, I guess.
Well, I think you know where I'm going.
Yes.
Triple H and Chris Jericho, because he was no better in the match. I don't know if you're allowed to name two, but if I have to narrow it down, you know who it'll be. But I think they both deserve credit for this match.
Yeah. They committed the same crime. They were in collusion.
If they both murdered someone, they'd both go to jail. And they murdered my will to watch the rest of the show. So,
yeah. I'll let you have it. So MVP, I had Angle just because he's so good. He was good in the match. He's good running away, and then he's good reacting and selling his head getting shaved. So I went Angle.
I went Rob Van Dam. I really liked that first match, and I think it was a lot of because of the adjustments he made and the things he didn't do that he normally does, like a lot of the character stuff. I thought it really helped sell the urgency and made it really interesting.
All right, very good. Well, that will wrap us up for Judgment Day 2002. Aaron, we of course have we've been kind of plugging them as we went along as they came up. But would you like to? Why don't you tell us about the shows that you're on the North South feed?
Sure. Well, if you want to check out the North South Connection Podcast Network, there's all kinds of awesome stuff going on. Mondays are usually my day. Right now I'm doing two shows on Mondays. The first one is called The Year That Was, which is where I watched every WWF pay-per-view they've ever done, and then I rank the years based on quality. And I'm currently – we've done 9. The latest one was 2019. So it's just basically a retrospective look at the year, the highs, the lows, the good, the bad. Unfortunately, right now we're on kind of the bad because we're at the bottom end of the list, but that's going to improve. And on alternating Mondays, I do a show with my buddy Reg. It's called From Montreal to Memphis. It's just a deep dive show, so we'll take a topic and kind of delve into it. Like one of my favorites we did was about Randy Savage, how we talked about how like his whole career is really just one long story arc. So that's pretty fun. On Tuesdays, I do TNA Never Dies with JT and Jenny. We're watching TNA from the very beginning. It's quite an experience. And then JT and I do No Holds Barred on Saturdays. It's either 2, sometimes 3 Saturdays a month. We do a lot of lists. We break down the best pay-per-view ever. The one coming up soon will be SummerSlam, which is the best SummerSlam of all time. We do it by month. So check it out. But there's all kinds of fun stuff going on in North South Connection Podcast Network. Are you gonna hit the rest?
Yeah, so we have a ton of stuff. We have Chad Does Carolina Dreaming. where he's going through kind of the 80s WCW and Jim Crockett stuff for the GWCW project. Chad also does Fighting Spirit of 06, where he's kind of going through the year of 06 and really comprehensive, like going through pretty much every like North American wrestling promotion in 06. Man, we have we actually have some new stuff coming down the pike soon, which is not only wrestling related, which is cool. So be on the lookout for that. Yeah, just ton of cool stuff coming out pretty much every day. I mean, I think including the weekend pretty much at this point. So
yeah, we're starting out
Sundays. Yeah, so check it out. Other than that, I'm glad we got to do a north-south connection within a pod, because it's the first time I think I've done that on this show, is have two people from the north-south feed on one. And I think geographically we may have set the record as far as the north-south feed for the longest distance north to south of two people on a podcast, because I'm in New Orleans, so.
Oh yeah, you're definitely the furthest, and I'm in Montreal, Quebec, so.
But we have the French connection, because so there we go. So other than that, so be sure to check out everything on the North South feed. Check out Aaron's stuff. I love the year that was. That's like a first day listen for me. As soon as that drops, I have to listen to it because I really enjoy following along with it. So
thanks, dude.
So other than that, this has been the Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast. On the next show, we'll continue on, and that's it. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Your hair, do you think it's gonna make him change?
I'm just a boy with a new haircut,
and that's a pretty nice haircut. Charger like a puzzle, hitmen wearing muzzles. Hesitate to die, look around, around. The second drummer drowned, this telephone is found. Crazy bands start up each and every day. I saw another one just the other day, a special new band. I don't remember lying, I don't remember lying, I don't remember a word, but I don't care, I care, I really don't care. Did you see the drummer's head? Songs are bought, and so are you.